The Masterclass podcast is made on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Bunurong people. We recognise First Nations people as the original owners and custodians of the lands and waterways across the Australian continent. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
What makes you different from your peers who also want to get a job in journalism? Think about how to maximize them while not make it negatively affect you that much.
So you got a job from Twitter?
Yes. Tweeting had become my only way to make myself known. Their first question will usually be, are you an Australian citizen or a permanent resident? And once you click no, the system will just close. None of you guys are going to hire me, then I'm going to pitch an idea, and then at least I will sell this idea and make it work. I'm Wing Kwong, an audio producer and digital reporter with the ABC. In this episode, I'm going to give you a masterclass on starting a career in journalism.
Hello, and welcome to Season 3 of the Masterclass podcast. I'm Louisa Lim, and I teach audio journalism and podcasting at the University of Melbourne. Each episode, we speak to a master of journalism to talk about one aspect of their work. Today, we're hearing from Wing Kwong from the ABC, who's one of my former students at the University of Melbourne. Wing, I've invited you back because you are the busiest journalist that I know. You've always got something on the go, and you've really been focused on building a profile for yourself right from the beginning. I mean, from your experience, how soon should students start thinking about their profile?
As soon as possible. My story could be a little bit different from many other Australian students because I am an international student. And in 2014, when I came to Australia, I already knew that I want to do journalism and become a journalist. So as early as when I was in my foundation studies, I already looked up what kind of community media or student media I could sign up. And when I was in my undergraduate, I signed up for several student media, including the UniMelb's Farrago and also Meld Magazine, which was the Melbourne International Students online website. After that, I took Master of Journalism at University of Melbourne, but I just continue volunteering at community media and community radio with the hope of just gain more experience and build up my portfolio.
Yeah, so I remember even when you were studying with me, you were doing lots of stories, and among them you were doing stories, for example, for the youth radio show All the Best. You did a story about the end of a bilingual Vietnamese program in the Melbourne suburb of Footscray. I mean, maybe we can listen to a little bit of that.
3 years ago, they studied only 5 hours, and then they cut to 2 hours, and next year is 1 hour, and I have no idea in the future.
Then came the announcement in April that the program was being cut.
So from your perspective, I mean, how helpful were those sort of community programs for you? Was it helpful in getting your name known or in building networks? Where do you think the value lay?
Now, looking back to these years of doing community and student media, I'm really grateful and proud of myself for making such a good decision because on one hand, I develop my skills gradually from someone who speaks English as a second language to now being able to write anything in English very quickly and accurately. And I also develop a network with peers who are also having dreams of journalism. And now many of them are my colleagues. And we would catch up together and we talk about what stories we've been doing or what kind of skills that we are looking forward to upgrade. So it's been a really amazing journey to do this stuff with community and student media.
And do you think it helped you get a job? I mean, did you also get mentors and bosses that way?
Yes, it's really helpful. And in fact, because I'm an international student, I wasn't even eligible to apply for formal mentoring program by some journalism institutes like Walkley or Melbourne Press Club, because they were only available for domestic students. So doing these community radios become the only way I could seek a mentorship with someone who were already in the industry. And it was really helpful, especially the best mentorship, where I had the ability to work with people who were really passionate about audio and already done a few audio documentaries. And under their guidance, I understand how to craft a script, how to make sound effects, and how to make the whole episode and story sounds really good. And that equipped me with the skills that I need. But beyond that, it also gave me the portfolio and network that I need when later, after I graduated in 2020, to seek a job. Because as a graduate of 2020, you don't really have chance to apply for any cadetship or traineeship because there wasn't such a thing in Australia at the time due to the pandemic. And this sort of community work enabled me to secure some casual shifts. And also, because many Australian journalists, especially if they're doing audio, they also come from in the community radio background. So when they read your resume and see that, oh, you have worked with All the Best or you have worked with Scene, they know that you are trained. My current supervising producer used to work for All the Best. And later, when I was back in the job market and tried to look for a job, she followed me on Twitter by the All the Best Audio Producer Network. And later when her team at the ABC started to recruit new people, she thought of me immediately and then sent me a message saying that, hey, we are looking for people. Do you want to try to apply for the job? So I applied and I got a job.
So you got a job from Twitter?
Yes.
Which is interesting because your Twitter profile is quite mouthy, right? Yeah. You tweet a lot, not just about journalism, also about your really disastrous dating life, your cats, whatever you're eating. Is it a help or a hindrance to be out there so much?
Yes and no. And to be honest, these days, after being able to work in journalism for 3 years, I slow down my tweeting pace because it becomes not that necessary for me to tweet that much because I'm already inside the industry. But at the really beginning of 2021, or even just back in 2020, tweeting had become my only way to make myself known. And unfortunately, this is actually a really sad thing because I'm not Australian. Back in 2020, and unfortunately today is still this situation, when I try to apply for a job via the online application system, their first question will usually be, are you an Australian citizen or a permanent resident? And once you click no, the system will just close. So you even don't have a chance to show your resume to your hiring manager and make them know that, oh, you are actually doing a good job. And a platform like Twitter that's like free, public, and with no permanent residency requirements becomes the only way for me to make myself known.
And nowadays, I mean, you said you've slowed down your Twitter, but have you replaced that with TikTok or Instagram or something else?
Not really. I'm now actually more seeing social media as more my personal platforms. And I do have professional platforms like LinkedIn, and I still use Twitter, now X, to retweet some of my work. But I also feel that I'm now at a time that what I need to do is to just build up the branding through my own work rather than my tweets. And this is really different from when I was in 2020, when I had to make people know that I was someone who had really creative, innovative news idea about stories like China. I need to express my opinion on China. I need to share stories about international students suffering in COVID, which is something that many journalists try to cover, but because they were not part of the community, they couldn't really get it. And through Twitter, I became a talent for a lot of news stories. That was an interesting experience because on one hand, you learn about how to do interview by being an interviewee. On the other hand, it also helps you know the journalist. And I usually will tell them that I'm actually a journalism student. So if you have internships or casuals, can you let me know? Most of the time they will say yes, but not really. They're just being friendly, like polite, and say yes, they will let me know.
What about a website? Is it worth it?
It's too expensive for me to build a website. Unfortunately, I do think a website is good, but I also think that I don't have that big portfolio right now to do it. However, I know these days people start to build up their Substack or newsletter to build up their personal brand. And I think this is actually a really smart way. I'm actually even considering doing it. I just need to find the time.
So you've also done a huge amount of work for other outlets. I mean, you've worked for The Guardian, for SBS, at ABC, and then you've also worked for Chinese language media like Initium. In terms of profile, which works best in helping you get known?
I actually think the Chinese language outlets are the one that I benefit most. And it's very interesting because I didn't do any news stuff with the two Chinese outlets I've worked with. One is Southern Weekly, which is an investigative commercial media in China. And then the other one is the Initium, which is based in Hong Kong, focusing on long form. I got involved with both media outlets via internships. At the time, again, during undergraduate studies, I found it really hard for me as an international student to secure an Australian internship. So I decided to just look up what was happening in China or Hong Kong, and I applied for the internship with them. I work as a social media producer for them. And at the time, despite the restricting press freedom in China and Hong Kong, they are actually much more advanced in digitalization. So I learned a lot about this sort of mindset, how you write from the audience perspective, how you write a piece that actually can engage with audience by working with these Chinese language outlets. And then later, now in after 2020 and 2021, Australian media starts to catch up with this digitalization trend. And I become the one who already know the skills. So I actually secure my first part-time job in Australia via a digital producer role with a company called Inco. They specialize in making digital news products, especially newsletters and a news aggregator app. And my role with them was to curate the news every day. The reason they picked me was because the editor saw that I had a really strong audience-based mindset. I would really work hard to think about what the reader wanted to read every day. So that became the skill that made me land in my first part-time job in Australia.
I think what's so impressive about your career is your ability to turn disadvantages into advantages. And one really good example of that is the podcast you did for the ABC called Wing versus the Machine, which is the story of your battle with the online English language test, which you needed to pass in order to get a visa to continue working in Australia.
I go for my second test, feeling confident. The result comes quicker this time. A few hours after taking the test, as I'm sitting in a cafe eating a cake, I received the email. It says, I got full marks in writing. Yay! Then I checked my speaking. 59. That's an even worse mark than last time. I sit in a cafe for a while staring at the score. I'm angry, frustrated, humiliated. I am a journalist writing English news for the ABC. I produce an English podcast for the SBS. And now this test is telling me my English is actually not that good. In fact, it's just okay level. So I go to Twitter, post about my score, and rant about it.
And because I write a lot of Chinese Australian news, a lot of them actually follow me on Twitter. And some of them start to give me suggestions on how to win this test. One of them gives me a phone number. And that's how I meet James, the man who changes my life.
You've talked already a lot about some of the disadvantages that you face because of your visa status. The fact that you're not a native English speaker, yet you've got, you know, all these other languages that many Australians can't speak, you know, Cantonese and Mandarin. How does that weigh up when you're looking for a job? Is it an advantage or a disadvantage?
I have found my Chinese background more disadvantaged than advantage.
Really? Because people are always asking us whether we've got any Chinese speaking students.
Exactly. And people keep saying that China has so many good stories and we should just have more China reporters to do that. But saying is saying, people are not acting on that. At the end of the day, China coverage is just one of the really small coverages among the Australian media landscape. And what that means is that their Chinese team or Asian news media team are not hiring people. They have really few spots for new young journalists to step in. And they always have really experienced Chinese-speaking journalists working there, which is actually a good thing. But for someone who's like still young, they don't have enough spot for me to join. And that's also an issue I encountered back in 2021. I once worked with the ABC's Asia Pacific newsroom for 5 months, but I was only work at the casual. And in the end, they have to end my casual shifts. And I went back to the job market and start applying for jobs. I applied for regional newspapers. I applied for all the other local newsrooms. They all say like, wow, your China portfolio is amazing. Like you could actually write like an expert, but you have zero experience in general news coverage. And what we are looking at when we want to hire a young person is how good they are in doing general news. So that has been really frustrating for me.
So and you have to be a generalist and a specialist.
Yes, exactly. But somehow, because of my background, speaking Cantonese and Mandarin, there are still very few journalists of Chinese background in Australia that can actually speak two languages at the same time. I got lots of opportunity to do freelancing projects that would be like finished in a week or a month. And that's how I got involved with several investigative projects about migrant exploitation and also the federal election in 2022 with The Guardian, because I could speak the language and I understand the community and I have network. It's some short form gig, but they are also helping me to build up my portfolio in the end. But for young graduates who really think that I want to get a secure job or try to land in the newsroom, having a specialized skill is good, but it's not going to help you a lot. You still need to demonstrate that you can write a news quickly and accurately.
And I wanted to ask about your own podcast, Chinese-ish, that you hosted with Mark Yin.
As young Chinese Australians, we're kind of caught between two countries and two cultures, being forced to reflect on whether we're too Chinese to fit into Australia or too Australian to fit back into Chinese culture.
And that's why we are making this podcast, Chinese-ish, to talk about all the ways of being Chinese in Australia as a young person. Produced by
So what
SBS.
Did you learn about journalism from that project?
Keep pitching. There's a really funny story about why this podcast came out. So Mark and I have been good friends throughout uni, and we kind of did a podcast for fun for our student radio station. At that time, when the SBS launched the podcast pitch competition, I was in the middle of trying to apply for jobs and I got rejected terribly. Like I was just like, I got feedback from editors and journalists who say like, you are going to be an amazing journalist in the future. Like your China writing is brilliant, but sorry, we are looking for someone with more breaking news background. So I just got really annoyed by that. And then I saw this page looking for podcasts and I was like, okay, none of you guys are going to hire me. Then I'm going to pitch an idea. And then at least I will sell this idea and make it work. So I think I have this experience of doing stuff in Chinese Australian community, but young people has always been a topic that really touches me. So I came up with this idea that we need to do something about young Chinese Australians. And I reached out to Mark, who has also been doing lots of research on young people in Australia. And then we said that, yes, let's do this. And then we just wrote up the application in a day. And when we got a call from SBS, they actually asked us, do you want to do it in Mandarin? And I told them that, no, I will just do it in English because we need something in English about the young Chinese Australians. We already have Mandarin podcasts talking about their life, but the mainstream English media audience, they are not having enough content like this. And when I said this, I kind of feel like that I'm not just talking about my podcast, but also myself, that I'm just such a unique case, such a unique journalist. But because of my visa situation, because of my background, it's just much harder for me to secure a job compared to my classmates. And in the end, SBS said yes. And I'm so happy that they decided to embrace my awkwardness and uniqueness. And we got this podcast out and we received really good feedback, even from people in Canada saying that, like, I know you, this is like a Chinese Australian podcast, but as a Canadian, Chinese Canadian, I can completely relate to whatever you said.
I've actually learned so much about what you've done. I thought that I had been kind of across your output, but I realized in this interview that I actually didn't know the half of it. I mean, do you ever sleep? How have you managed to do so many projects?
I sleep 8 hours a day and I go to gym every week. I try to maintain a really good physical figure because now I do realize that I couldn't be like the 2022 me where I could just not sleep and stay up in the library to finish an assignment. Like, I can't do that anymore. But I think that's also why I rant about my dating life that much on Twitter, because I work too much and then my dating life just sucks. I think it's, I'm still trying to find the balance between them.
So what are your two top tips for students trying to establish themselves as journalists?
First tip, work really, really, really hard on all the basic journalism skills, on how to write a story really quickly and accurately, on how to do a recording very quickly, productively, on how to edit a video package within the shortest time. This will really help you to land in any job, and it will just give you so much more opportunities to find a job. You are not going to get limited or pigeonholed in a small category of stuff you could do. My second tip, while you should build up your general skills, always remember what makes you outstanding, what makes you different from your peers who also want to get a job in journalism, and think about how to maximize them while not make it negatively affect you that much. In my case, I did kind of find my Chinese background a bit disadvantaged me from getting more jobs. But at the end of the day, it's also my Chinese background and my Chinese knowledge that make my portfolio known and build up my network so that lots of people on Twitter saw my work, thought that they were amazing, and they started to wonder why such a good journalist even couldn't find a job in Australian news media. And then they would start to pay attention to other job opportunities and let me know. I should have one more tip.
Bonus tip.
Even if you are in a situation like me, like having a visa issue, not being eligible for any cadetship, traineeship, or even mentoring program, and feeling extremely frustrated by the lack of media diversity in Australian newsroom, just work hard, because in this industry, there are people who actually try to make the change. You just need that really one opportunity to demonstrate it to them. And these people, they will give you the opportunity when they see that you are valuable.
Thank you. And I think you have a task for our students.
Write down three skills that you are really good at in terms of journalism and write a small paragraph on how you are going to pitch them to a hiring manager.
That was Wing Kwang, an audio producer and digital reporter for the ABC. This is the last episode of this season of The Masterclass. It was produced by Dylan Bird and myself. It's edited by Dylan Bird. Sound design and post-production by John Jia. The original concept is by Anders Furs. The theme tune is by Susie Wilkins. It was partially funded by the GEM Scott Trust, and it's brought to you from the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne.